with the late Patty Fink, and this is the oldest, longest-running gay and lesbian radio show on the air anywhere in the world. I want to welcome our guests. Our guests are Raul Hinojosa. He is a former KNON DJ, guru, broadcaster. What are we? A KNON person.
Personality, on-air personality.
And past president of the Rainbow Chapter of LULAC here in Dallas, which is actually the reason we have you on today. John Trevino, also a past president of Rainbow LULAC, and Juan Contreras. And they're going to talk about an event that they have coming up next weekend in conjunction with Pride Weekend. That is, are we not hearing me?
I'm not hearing you very well.
Am I on? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Okay. You have an event coming up. Tell us about the event. John?
Sure. Well, the event is called the LGBTQ Social Justice Summit. And it started, this is our second annual Social Justice Summit. And it started 2 years ago, kind of as a brainchild of our board, to put a full day of education on LGBT issues and Latino issues so that we can help empower and enable the two communities to go out and spread the word and be active if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Raul, tell us just a little bit about what the event is, where and when.
Mm-hmm. So the summit is next Saturday, September 14th, at the University of Texas at Dallas at the Clark Center in Richardson. And it's a free event. I think that's an important thing to bring up.
But people need to get their money in early.
They do. Yeah, right. Exactly. And the better part is you get free breakfast and lunch as part of it to come to it. We'll give the website now because we always are chatty, but it's LGBTQSummit.com to get more information about it. But the exciting part is that it adds on to all of the great things that are happening next weekend for Pride. And so, on Saturday, you have a great way to get some, as John said, education about a lot of different topics. So we'll be covering everything from immigration to health to advocacy to the history of the LGBT community in Dallas. We have a really colorful surprising history that people don't know about discrimination of Latino LGBT people here and Latinos in general too. So
okay, so this is Dallas. I can't imagine any discrimination. So let's jump into this. You're laughing.
Yeah.
Do you have some stories or some examples?
Well, you know, our group that's talking about LGBT Latino history has some great stories to share about sort of ways they were treated at clubs. There were, you know, Jesus Chaitis, who actually has a long history with KNON.
He's a former president of KNON.
Right, and he had also the first gay Latino show here on KNON, Sin Fronteras. It broke ground. It was a really important show. But when he would go to clubs, I mean, they would ask him for three forms of ID, you know, like to get in to prove his age. And we know he looks fabulous all the time, but you know, this was a way that they would sort of discriminate against certain Latinos because they knew maybe they didn't have IDs, or if they were immigrants. Obviously, we still are dealing with this today, interestingly enough.
I have that problem. Yeah. I'm always carded.
Yeah.
You know, did he get to wear open-toed shoes? Because, you know, women in that day and era were not allowed in the clubs either.
Couldn't.
Had to do lots of ID and could not wear open-toed shoes.
Right.
But I bet
he's
just good.
Right. He might have. He can pull it off for sure. So, but yeah, but I mean, so there were all kinds of interesting things about that. And then, I mean, just stories about discrimination when it comes to housing, all sorts of different things. They also founded an organization, and so it'll be interesting to hear about at the summit during his panel about the organization that he founded, the Hispanic Coalition of Dallas, the Gay and Lesbian Hispanic Coalition of Dallas. And so there's several of the founding members. One of the stories, too, that he shares a lot about is certainly the impact of HIV and AIDS on the LGBT community, certainly in the Latino community, but many of the activists that started that organization with him aren't even around anymore. There's just a few of that sort of group around, and so they'll share stories about sort of creating that organization, which we like to think of as one of the precursors to our Rainbow Council and to all of the other sort of organizations that came after it.
Right. John, tell us a little bit about the history of the Rainbow Council and where it's going
which sure. It's going really nationwide, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll start off by telling you that a little history about LULAC in general. LULAC was started here in Texas, in Corpus Christi, Texas. Our council, the Rainbow Council, LULAC 4871, started in 2006. It was a small group of civically engaged Latinos who wanted to do something in Dallas, and they started a different group. I was not in Dallas. I was not part of that small group. Actually, got it started. Although I was in Dallas already, so they started this and looked at LULAC as a possibility to get the council together. Funny thing is that a lot of people think of the Hispanic community as being very conservative and not very welcoming to LGBT issues. We've actually found the opposite. In our short history, we've actually been invited to speak at many different events on a national level, state level, and also have been recognized on a national level up to and including being named Council of the Year on a national level, which is pretty great. You know, out of all the councils all over the U.S., we were recognized.
That's pretty special.
It really is. So when you think about, the Hispanic community, a lot of folks say, well, they're just not very welcoming to your issues, but we just haven't found that. I haven't seen it. Our council started in 2006, and it was really to kind of start, foster a better dialogue between our two communities, the LGBT and the Hispanic community, because we are, you know, we're part of both. I know I look, you know, if this is being videotaped, I look pretty pale. I'm probably the palest Mexican-American, but I grew up in South Texas, very stereotypically Hispanic. And, you know, both communities are ours, and we wanted to foster a better dialogue, and that's kind of how that council started. And as a result, we started, you know, out there on both communities trying to be visible. Then a youth council approached us. You know, when the youth council, LULAC is set up where you've got adult councils like ours, you've got youth councils, and that's set up for high school students and also a young adult section. Those are kind of college-aged kids. We were approached by a group who was wanting to form a youth council. These are high school students, and these are, you know, most of whom were not LGBT students, but they approached us to sponsor them. They need a sponsor, so that's pretty great. They looked at us because we were so visible in the community.
And that's kind of typical. Very often in the high schools, what we're finding are the GSAs, the Gay Straight Alliances. Right. It's the straight part of the Gay Straight Alliance that are mm-hmm. forming these groups, because those kids feel real comfortable talking about these issues in a way, because they're one step removed, but right. it's their friends. And probably same thing here. It's Hispanic kids who just, you know, they have other friends who are gay.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, not all our membership is gay. You know, that we've got a lot of allies who are members and very active members, and actually past board members as well as current board members who are not LGBT.
Yeah, there are, I mean, it's funny, just to rag a little bit, I guess, on some of the LULAC councils, but there are a lot of councils that do a variety of different things, and most of them, their leadership decides sort of what's important to them, what are the sort of activities they want to do, and we have a large number of straight allies that join our council that say, well, you guys are the busiest ones. Like, yeah. You guys do the most stuff, right. Or you have the most fun parties or whatever. I mean, we just always have a lot of activities going on. And so I think it's been really cool to see the number of straight allies that we attract to our council. But it's even more fascinating to see the college ones and the high school ones, because it's right, David. Like, we see that there is a lot of support from straight allies and a lot more comfort about talking about issues openly in those environments.
Because to a lot of college age kids and high school kids, it's the kind of thing. Oh, you're gay? Oh, okay. That's cool.
Then that's the discussion.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'll tell you, even, you know, older folks like us, one of the things that we do in North Texas, our district, which is all of North Texas, is District 3. And one of the things that our district does around the holiday season is something called Cena en el Barrio, dinner in the neighborhood. And what we do is all the different councils collect donations in kind. Like, you get, some councils will collect a bunch of canned food. And they do it by, you know, the adults, young adults, you get the canned food. You know, the youth councils, you guys get this type of food. And typically in the last few times that we've had ours, the adult councils are the dessert. And typically that's cake mixes and that sort of thing. Then we get some sponsors, local sponsors here for the protein. the turkeys or chickens if we can't get the turkeys. And those are all distributed within your council. Our council, as you know, is the LGBT focused. And an important thing for us was to make sure that our meetings and our focus was around our neighborhood. So we actually meet at Havana's and there on the Strip. And before that, it was at another location there on the Strip. Couple of times, what we do, because typically what they do in other councils is they collect about anywhere between 50 to 100 meals or more, depending on how much you're willing to collect on your end, and you distribute it to needy families in your local area. Well, for us, we wanted to do things a little different. So what we've done every year that we've done this is selected a couple of beneficiaries, and the last few years it's been the Resource Center Pantry as well as the AIDS Interfaith Network. They've got a soup kitchen there, and they have just we tell them what we want to do. And you know, they have no problem with it. And in fact, anything that's left over, one year they had so many onions left over, these 100-pound pound sacks of onions, and we took them all to the AIDS Interfaith Network, and they were able to make soups and different things with them. Just tons of it.
Yeah, we have a very supportive district and state network. So, and you know, as for you know where the movement is going, at least with LULAC Rainbow Councils, we've heard good news this week that there's an Orange County Young Adult Chapter, LGBT chapter that opened. There's an Columbus, Ohio Adult Rainbow Council, and there's a Houston Rainbow Council already that started, I guess, 2 years ago.
Yeah, so it took Houston like 5 or 6 years after you were formed to form theirs.
Right.
But they were the first other rainbow council that even formed. What took so long for other places? I mean, it's normal that Dallas creates things first, because there are so many national organizations. You know, Black Tie Dinner comes to mind. Yeah. Our Black Tie Dinner.
HRC's Federal Club started here.
National
Coming Out Day, all that stuff.
All that stuff started here, and that's typical in Dallas. Victory Fund.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you part of what happened with the Houston Council, and I think it had to do with the election of their mayor, Anise Parker. You know, there were a lot of LGBT Latino leaders that helped with the election that sort of some of the LULAC membership went and said, well, is there any interest in maybe starting this? And so their first president, Edward Sanchez, was very involved in the campaign and learned a lot about LULAC through some of his friends there, and then sort of led the charge. Part of the challenge is always, of course, finding a leader that's willing to get people together and put in the work to build the chapter up. I mean, we were lucky to have some great leaders that have done that and are still a part of it here. And so in Houston, I think that's where they were able to identify with after the energy of getting their mayor elected, that some people that really wanted to step up and continue working on LGBT Latino issues, and found LULAC to be the great platform, because you know, it's a civil rights organization, and obviously these are civil rights that we're fighting for. So so it worked out. But we can the thing that makes us more proud than anything is that we can always say we beat Houston in that regard. Yeah. So yeah, there's all those Facebook things about Houston versus Dallas. Well, this is another notch in Dallas.
Always. Okay, so they had the gay mayor before we did.
Yeah.
So we had one running before.
But exactly, right.
And kudos to Anise Parker. She's running for her third term.
Third and final, yeah. She'll be the end of last term she can run for. So, yeah, that's awesome.
Isn't that exciting? Yeah, I mean, a lesbian mayor. She ran and she won and she got reelected.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
And what's interesting, and we're getting off topic here, but that's okay, because as you know, Raul, we sometimes meander.
Yeah.
Have you been watching the New York City race?
Yeah.
Because what's interesting is with Chris Quinn, who's running there, the difference is there's a whole group called something like Gays and Lesbians Against Quinn.
Oh, wow.
And there would never have been a Gays and Lesbians Against Parker, because Parker had built up such support around the city, whereas Quinn hasn't. Quinn did things like, and this was the big thing in New York, and this is why they're against her. She was instrumental in closing a hospital down in southern Manhattan, you know, down in the village, where most people who had AIDS down there died or were helped.
Yeah.
And so this is big thing, and there's such tension there between the different sides. Here, we're in Dallas, and we're saying we like the mayor of Houston.
Right.
I mean, how extraordinary. When was the last time you said you liked the mayor of Houston? For any reason.
Well, I'd like Bill White, but you know.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Anise has been on this show.
After he was gone.
Well, if he'd come on this show, we would love him.
There you go. Well, and the best part is now it's on tape and video that we said that. So this is important to know. It's a historical moment. So
But, you know, I think that's part of the reason, though, why Rainbow LULAC started here. And from the beginning, you had support from LULAC. Mm-hmm. But this being Texas, and most people think of Texans as being very different from this, mm-hmm. but we support each other.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just to jump ahead here, Raul, I think all of us kind of found LULAC differently. You know, I was actually in Houston, so I'll tell you, I lived in Houston before I moved here, and actually loved Houston. So, you know.
Okay, you lived there. We'll accept that.
But, you know, I was in North Texas, and I was, you know, speaking at various different groups. And was kind of going parallel track to a lot of the folks who had just started LULAC 4871. And I was going around talking about immigration issues. My partner, I'm a U.S. half of a binational couple. And actually just got married in July, as a matter of fact.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. So I was going around talking to any LGBT group or any group who would have me and talking about why immigration is also an LGBT issue. And Jesse Garcia, as many of you know, was doing the same, talking about this at the LULAC meetings. And it was very early on, and a friend of mine, mutual friend of ours, said, you know, you really should meet Jesse Garcia. He's doing the same thing. So we were kind of going parallel tracks, and that's how our paths crossed. And next thing I know, he asked me to be on the board, and here we are years later. And then I became president after Jesse moved to D.C.
Okay, Juan, we're going to force you to be on mic. How did you find LULAC?
I found LULAC through Jesse Garcia.
Ah.
So we kind of all met Jesse at a point, and kind of we loved the work he was doing, and which that's what attracted me to LULAC, specifically LGBT issues within LULAC.
Great. And Raul?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess Jesse Garcia was the person who brought me to LULAC also. Before our Rainbow Council started, though, we were there was a group called Valiente, which was sort of the precursor organization to the Rainbow Council. And I was part of Valiente in the very early days before we started doing that. And then I sort of stepped away from that and met Jesse because he was from South Texas. We had a great connection, and then I got sort of connected back to LULAC that way. And so, but you know, the interesting thing is we talked about our straight allies. There were lots of great straight LULAC leaders that advocated for the creation of our council. And I think without having them stand up, people said, okay, well, Hector Flores and Renee Martinez are behind this. And so then they're probably okay. You know, like, we can't go against them because they have been longtime activists here and longtime activists within LULAC. Yeah. And so that, I think, was another really important sort of political way to make sure we had some help.
Okay, we need to take a break. Doc, do you think you can handle this?
I'm going to try.
Our board operator ran out of the ran out of the studio, but this is KNON, so if it doesn't work, we'll
she
just
wasn't on fire.
Yeah. She was not on fire, so we're just, and that's happened before. Oh wait, it was the bathroom that was on fire while we were on there. Great. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guests are John Trevino, Juan Contreras, and Raul Hinojosa, and we're talking about an event that they have coming up next week, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now is the time to make your pledge count. KNON has a new address to send your pledge to. KNON no longer uses a P.O. box. So send your pledge to KNON, 5353 Maple Avenue, Suite 200, Dallas, Texas, 75235. And if you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at knon.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. Remember, don't use the P.O. box. Send that pledge to KNON, 5353 Maple Avenue, Suite 200 in Dallas, 75235. Be sure to put the name of the show you are supporting on the check, money order, or envelope. Questions about KNON Pledge Drive? Call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
When they're gone for good. This is Scott from KNON's Texas Blues Radio telling you don't miss out on some great blues. KNON's Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. It's a CD put together by real blues fans for real blues fans like you. Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 features great local blues from Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, J.J. and the Detonators, the Chris Watson Band, the Two Tones, Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone with Charlie Love, Dave Millsap, Sirloin and the Ass Kicking Machine, Tutu Jones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, and Johnny Red and the Roosters. Get a copy now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records. This is a Dallas Blues collector's item. A very limited amount of vinyl copies can be found at Forever Young Records, the sponsor of this great blues project. CD downloads are available at cdbaby.com. Whether you get it as a download, on vinyl, or on CD, all the proceeds will benefit KNON. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit knon.org.
This is Alex Hanselka, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guests are John Trevino, Juan Contreras, and Raul Hinojosa. We're talking about an event that's going to go on at UT Dallas next weekend. It's all day long. It starts at, what time? About 8 o'clock is it's registration.
I know, it's early day.
Free breakfast. It's in the Clark Center, which is their campus center.
Yeah, right. It's it used to be the conference center, but it's because Clark Center there, yeah. In Richardson.
Easy to find. UTD is right on Campbell Road.
Yep.
You'll see it. It's
Campbell and Waterview. It's all day. It's 9 to 5. Registration starts at 8. There's lunch included. And it's part of Pride Weekend. So next weekend, this is a great way to come and learn about some very interesting topics and then have fun on Sunday, sort of marching and having fun celebrating our Pride.
So. Okay. So, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to say, when you go to your website, which is
LGBTQSummit.com,
you can go, when you go to register, it's like buying something, but it's free.
Yeah,
it is.
You just sign up.
But remember the queue, because I know it takes you somewhere.
Yeah, don't want to leave off the queue, because then I think it might you be don't a, know where you go off.
It's also the queue includes the A's.
Yeah.
The allies.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And
that's a great point. You don't have to be Latino to come to this. We're certainly not going to ask you for your Latino card. And you don't have to be a GLBTQ person either. Right. So we'd love to have straight allies come to learn, because the information we're going to talk about is important for all of us to understand.
Yeah. And we're trying to be very inclusive. Again, the first one we did was last year. And we focused on health and wellness as one of the panels, and we focused on HIV and male issues primarily. This year, we are also including a health and wellness issue, and we really wanted to make sure that this year the focus was on women's issues. So we've got kind of a little health fair, and Raul and Juan, you probably can help me there to talk a little bit more about that, but that's this year's.
Well, specifically on the panel, on the presentation that we have, and I have to remind Patty about this. In the old studio a long time ago, in the old house, you made me an honorary lesbian, because you and Aaron made me an honorary lesbian. So my job this time was to put together a panel that talked about lesbian health issues, and so I channeled all my honorary lesbianism to do that.
Can you have a great panel? You have someone from Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, we have Denise Rodriguez from Planned Parenthood is coming to talk about. She's a former
member
of Rainbow Council.
She'll be talking about things like rape kits and how those prevent pregnancy.
Right. Well, she'll be educating people about what some of our legislators don't get. Right. Right.
About how we have to register our uterus with the state of Texas.
Exactly.
Those things.
All of those things. We'll be sharing things that are true at this one on this panel. Denise will help clear those things up. But certainly there are a lot of policy things to talk about with access to health care, with reproductive rights, and certainly the legislative actions against reproductive rights. There'll be a lot of discussion too about the impact of the Affordable Care Act. So that everybody's talking about Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, and so what is the impact on Latino communities, but on minority communities really, and also the LGBT community as well. And so there'll be, Denise will be talking about that, but we also have another speaker, Jessica Gonzalez Rojas, who is the executive director for the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health, and they are doing some really fascinating work around the federal issues related to reproductive health, reproductive freedom, advocating for social health justice, and then also they'll be talking about sort of how to, from not just policy things, but sort of how to access healthcare, right? So how to find a doctor that understands your cultural and perhaps orientation or identity expression issues, right? So thinking about how you access healthcare and how, what questions to ask or what things are important, because we know that minority communities and, in many cases, lesbians sometimes don't access healthcare as frequently as they should.
We happen to have a lesbian here in the studio.
Mm-hmm. We hope you go to the
doctor. I'm looking at her.
I do go to the doctor. I go to a lesbian doctor.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
See, yeah. I mean, so I think that there are unique issues that, you know, lesbians and trans people face, certainly, and then you add culture and language barriers, and so we'll be talking about those conversations.
And let's talk about some of those mm-hmm. things. Patty, see, I'm with you. I go to a gay doc. I even have a gay dentist. I've always felt just more comfortable, partially because it's not that I'm afraid to come out. It's I'm so beyond that. I'm not going to have the conversation with the doctor because it's like, I want to tell the doctor, get the over it. and that's how I feel about it. So I just do, and we're beyond that
right.
when we
right.
start that relationship. And I know that he understands and is looking for specific yeah, things. What are some of the lesbian issues that you are just more comfortable? And I so get that you go to a lesbian doctor.
Right. I think a lot of lesbians are concerned when they go to the doctor about coming out to them. Yeah. I think just in the general sense that if you're not a straight heterosexual in discussion with your doctor, that they may you may feel some discrimination, or you may be receiving lesser services, or maybe not the kind of quality care that you might get because mm-hmm. they may have some bias.
Right.
So there's that kind of general thing, but I think a lot of lesbians are concerned about, you know, discussing the fact that many lesbians do not take birth control mm-hmm. and then they, you know, if they're not really get it, then you know, the doctors don't get it, then there may be some probing questions that are, you know,
Inappropriate.
Right.
You know, just things like that. And I think it's very, you know, I think most people think of lesbians as, you know, as gay people. Though certainly the right wingers who think that we're bad, that we're some sort of like, you know, always thinking about sex. But I don't think that's the case at all. I think most lesbians are incredibly modest, mm-hmm. and it's you know, it's a comfort issue. You want to be comfortable with your doctor, and yet you need those services. You need to get pap smears. You need to get
right.
all of those
that's
checks
so important.
That everybody you need to get on a regular basis.
Well, I got a question for you. We were talking about this earlier when before we came in here. I was sharing with folks that a very good friend of mine is an OBGYN in Houston, and he's a gay doctor, male. And I've often told him, you know, when I moved to Houston, I mean, at Dallas, I was so impressed that there were so many gay doctors, and you go to them, and they're very quick to pull out a sheet and refer you to other gay doctors. And I told him, you know, have you ever thought about having your focus on lesbian health? And what he told me is that, you know, many lesbians don't go see the doctor. That, mm-hmm. that's what he encountered. So I wondered if you'd had these kind of conversations with your friends and what you thought, you know, was the basis for that. And that's why we felt we really wanted to include that in this summit.
And I think it's really important because I think a lot of lesbians are fearful of going to the doctor, that they're going to feel some sort of rejection. It's very personal. I
right.
mean, some of those services are just incredibly personal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the state of Texas in there, too, is just a problem, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, just right. dealing with your doctor alone, I think there's a comfort level one would find if you know your doctor is out or if your doctor has some sort of expression that they are welcoming. That's why I think it's so important for these statements to be out there and people
yep.
can see them, because then if a doctor said, I'm trans friendly, I get gender identity and expression, you know, I mean, you're gonna feel a lot more comfortable going as a trans person to that doctor than someone who says nothing.
Yeah.
So I had this argument with Blue Cross when we changed to them. I hate this company. So they give you your list of doctors that you can go to. So I said, okay, I don't see a list here for gay friendly docs. Which ones are? I wanted to know, because my doctor, who they put out of business, specifically because they owe him so much money, he's not on the list.
Yeah.
Okay, so which doctor can I go to? And I want one specifically who's not going to be judgmental of me being gay. And yes, I did have this conversation with some poor operator with Blue Cross. Could they refer me? No.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that is so important.
Right. Right. That's not in the training manual, I'm sure. I'm certain that wasn't in there.
No, it's not, but if they get those calls enough, it will be.
Yeah, but it isn't, and it's an issue. I mean, even think about family planning, right? So if you're a lesbian and you want to have a child or you're a surrogate or whatever, I mean, you know, you have to have a doctor that understands though having that conversation. It's not going to judge you, right? Or create barriers. And then we talked about trans a little bit before the show, but trans, you know, there are trans people who have still have certain body parts and have to have those wellness exams as well, right? And so either the doctor has to know to be able to ask about those or to say, we need to screen this, or have you had this procedure done to check that, or you have to feel comfortable enough if you're a trans person to say, I need to have a prostate exam, or I need to have a pap smear or whatever.
Well, even aside from that, Raul, it's really the issue if you present as female.
Right.
You know, you want to be treated as female. It's not going to a doctor who's going to know that you're presenting as female, but you've got a penis, you know, and they're going to be treating you one way or the other, you know. It's just a level of comfort. And when you're in that really intimate, you know, situation of going to see your doctor and talking about these things, you want to be respected. You're human, right. You know.
And I think discrimination in that area is so subtle. It can be so subtle. Omission of information. Mm-hmm. Moving on without mentioning a procedure that you should be having done or test is especially with someone who only goes to the doctor now and then because they are fearful of this very kind of discrimination. It's a cyclical problem.
Right.
And so, you know, finding lesbians and trans people, finding a doctor they're comfortable with and then making the effort to go regularly and get those checkups, I think, is a big problem. I mean, just that alone is a big problem.
Yeah. And then the other piece that these two groups also talk about is undocumented communities. And so certainly you talk even on a more basic level about access issues, right? So like, where do you go to a clinic if you don't have health insurance or if you're not covered by the Affordable Care Act? And then dealing with cultural sensitivities, right? And understanding culture, cultural differences of people or even language things. So they'll talk about a broad array of health issues, but we wanted them to make sure and be woman and trans focused.
So. Right. For this year, that means we're trying to be inclusive again. We'll have a sign language interpreter there, depending on what the language ability. Many of us speak Spanish, and some of our board members are, you know, phenomenal, you know, on the Spanish. So, you know, maybe we can find an area where they can translate for them. But we want to be as inclusive as we can for this.
And I always like to point out, the criticism is always, why don't those people learn to speak English? And you're actually speaking for yourselves, aren't you? We do not have a translator here in the studio.
Right.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to be clear there.
I'm all, this is what you get. This is my English. Yeah.
Well, I was so excited to see on your lineup, so to speak, you've got Mary Durbin coming from HRI, which is the Human Rights Initiative in North Texas, and Cannon Flowers for many years was the executive director there, and he's been on this show many times.
Yeah.
And then John Netchman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love John Netchman and speaking part, his session rolls right into our hour.
Yes.
But we would love to have him back on the show. He's been on the show many times
as
well.
Yeah, he's terrific. He and I are both attorneys. I'm a local attorney up here, and we've been involved on the state level as well as the national level. State level with the LGBT law section, and then on the national level with the Hispanic National Bar Association, and he's been at several different panels. And I called, you know, I reached out to him, and he immediately said yes, that he'd be here. And, you know, immigration, is a very broad topic, but it's an exciting year now with the recent Supreme Court decision on DOMA. He's here to talk about that. He could do the whole day on immigration, but focusing on that, on family issues of immigration. Then we have Mary, who is going to talk about asylum. A lot of people don't realize that asylum is also an LGBT issue, or you know, for trans, for example, if you live in a country that has that is very dangerous to be trans, that can also be, you know, potentially a basis for seeking asylum.
And that's actually a topic that's come up this week with the discussions around these new laws that have been passed in Russia, where Russian LGBT people are going to begin seeking political asylum in the United States as this gets a worse and worse environment for them to be around the country of Russia.
Yeah, my partner's actually from Russia, so he's, you know, very much up to speed on what's going on there and reading, you know, every day. And Actually, the National LGBT Bar had its recent annual conference in San Francisco, the 25th annual, and they were trying to put together a panel of Russian experts to talk about that. Just very sad what's going on there.
One of the gayest cities in the world right now is Tel Aviv, and the reason is it's mostly gay Jewish immigration from Russia.
Wow.
Because there are so many gay Jews who have fled, basically. They don't even need to seek asylum. If they're Jewish, they can stay there. But the population, it's at least 20% gay now in Tel Aviv. I was shocked at that statistic. It's huge.
Yeah. So. Well, and the broader point, too, I think, is that we tend to be focused on Latino immigration or Latino immigrants, I should say. But the immigration topic that they'll be talking about and the rights and the procedures and the case law really impacts people from lots of different countries. And so, Russia's on the radar. There are many people who will be coming here from Asian countries and a growing Asian immigration or immigrant population. So so I think that's part of it, too, is that, and that's why we say you don't have to be Latino to come to the summit, because the topics cover the gamut in terms of how it impacts different communities.
And we need to take a break. One of the things I've learned about writing about some of the gay immigration stories that I've been writing about in the Dallas Voice is that each case is different, and you need to seek some help. If it's from an attorney, if you can afford it, get it. If it's not, go to one of the immigration groups like Immigration Equality or HRI. But each one really is different, and you have to get that legal advice. So for anybody who is not Hispanic but is dealing with this issue, this would be a great place for them to come to get some information. And that's going to be next week in the Clark Center at UT Dallas from 8 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon. It is free. You can go to lgbtqsummit.com. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now's the time to make your pledge count. KNON has a new address for you to send your pledge to. KNON no longer uses a P.O. box. Send your pledge to KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Suite 200, Dallas, Texas 75235. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. Remember, don't use the P.O. box. Send that pledge to KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Suite 200 in Dallas, 75235. Be sure to put the name of the show you are supporting on the check or money order or the envelope. Questions about KNON Pledge Drive, 214-828-9500, extension 234.
Sweet 16, Louisiana Red, and I'm celebrating my 16th anniversary on KNON, Saturday, September the 21st. At the Sons of Herman Hall with my good friend TJ Hooker Taylor, son of Dallas Blues legend Johnny Taylor, the Hitmaker, Little Jimmy in the Feedback Band, and James White, to answer my cell phone butler. Doors will open at 7 p.m., music at 8 p.m. I'll be DJing and MCing with that down-home blues and soul mix. So come on out and party with me. Tickets are available now at KNON.org. Bill's Records in Dallas. Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie. The Sons of Herman Hall is located at 3414 Elm Street in Dallas. That's TJ Hooker Taylor, Lil Jimmy, and the Feedback Band, James Butler, and a big party at the Sons of Herman Hall, celebrating 16 years of Louisiana Reds, down home blues and soul mix on KNON, the voice of the people. This is a KNON benefit, sponsored in part by Beneficial Consultant Services, LLC.
This is Raphael McDonald from Resource Center Dallas. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guests today are from Rainbow Lulac here in Dallas, Raul Hinojosa, John Trevino, and Juan Contreras. Next week they have an LGBTQ summit on, it's mostly Hispanic issues, but some of these really do relate to you don't have to be Hispanic for some of these. And we were just talking about the immigration issue and the effect of DOMA on not just the immigration issue, but on other issues relating to the community. But let's get back to immigration. There are so many different ways that people can stay here, can get their visas, or can get asylum or deferred refugee status. There are just so many different permutations. It's real important that somebody not just blindly go into this and decide, I think I'll go for refugee status. You know.
That's so true, Dave. I am not an immigration lawyer. I am a lawyer, but I'm not an immigration lawyer. But again, you know, I am the U.S. half of a binational couple, and this issue is important to me. So I've been on several panels talking about immigration. You know, a lot of people think, oh, you know, this, what does this do? The Supreme Court, you know, this now gives me a basis. You have to understand that you got to go talk to an immigration lawyer, someone who does this, because it does depend on whether you entered the country lawfully. If you came here on a visa, there are differences. This has been in place before the Supreme Court decision on DOMA for straight people who were married. If you entered lawfully, you may have a basis to stay here while you adjust status, is what the term is, to, you know, when you're trying to get your citizenship through marriage. But if you came in, if you entered not lawfully, if you came in without papers, without documentation, that becomes more difficult, and your lawyer has to be creative and look at it to see if there's a basis for you to apply here in the U.S. You might have to go back to your country and apply that way. So that's why it's very important that you talk to an immigration lawyer. You know, John Netchman and Mary, who will be at this summit, you know, they're not going to have attorney-client privilege with you. You're not their client, you know, yet, and you could definitely talk to them if you have an issue. But it's really listening to them. They'll highlight these issues so that you are then armed with that knowledge and then can find a lawyer. One thing that I just wanted to point out is this is something new, and lawyers, like any other business, are going to try and drum up some business. When you go talk to a lawyer, make sure that your lawyer is, in fact, an immigration lawyer, that they know what they're doing on this, on your case.
Well, and even that they are a lawyer, right? Because they're in the Latino community. I know there are groups called notarios, which is kind of like a notary, I guess. Yeah. And so some people go to them, and they sort of dole out legal advice, but they're not lawyers. And so there are people who have gotten misinformation or filed incorrect forms, and so it's, I mean, even that, just making sure you go to someone who is a lawyer that's you know, can has the credentials to do that.
And if you know, I am a local lawyer, and I'm happy to, you know, give some names of folks I know locally and in other areas of the state. You know, reach out through LULAC 4871. The Dallas Bar Association also has a legal lines with referrals. If you don't know any lawyers, there's ways that you can find out. You know, you can get referrals.
And you can go to this summit next Saturday,
yes.
And perhaps John Netchman could tell you some questions to ask a potential lawyer, what you should know. Like, have you done these cases before?
Right.
How many? What happened?
Exactly.
What were the outcomes?
Yeah, and then there's also other 501c3, like Immigration Equality has been doing this for years and years, even before the UAFA. Mm-hmm. They've been doing this for many years. They also have a line that you can call and perhaps give you some names locally.
You know, one category you gave, you said either you came into the country documented or undocumented, but a huge number of people came into the country documented and became undocumented, fell out of status during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a third category that is handled differently. Mm-hmm. So you need to ask.
Yeah.
Another category that I find fascinating has to do with asylum. It's somebody that I became friendly with, and I went to his hearing. He was applying for asylum. The problem with LGBT asylum isn't whether or not you're entitled to it, it's whether or not you've applied for it in time. Because
very important, Dave. Very, very important.
Because you have to apply for it within a year of arriving within the country.
Yeah.
And he hadn't. And why hadn't he? Because based on the country that he came from, it never occurred to him that he was even eligible.
Well, that's so important because, yeah, you may have heard some stories, but you have to have like a demonstrated history. You need to be able to show that in your country that violence has existed, whether it's a particular class like LGBT or specifically trans. That's one that I see. or your family. You have to be able to show that you're in danger if you live there. Those are the issues just generally that you may have heard of with asylum.
Yeah, and that wasn't quite a problem in this case.
Yeah.
Proving that he was in danger wasn't the problem. The problem really was it had to do with how long it took him to apply.
And yeah, the 1 year, you can try and get a waiver or an exception, but typically that is very hard. But these are the kind of issues that, you know, I'm not an immigration lawyer, and this is not any kind of legal advice, but Mary Durbin from the Human Rights Initiative, again, you know, that's an organization that has a demonstrated history of working these issues for our community. And for us, it was important to reach out to people, you know, who are the real deal, that they're not, you know, this is the new thing to kind of focus on. These are people who've been in the trenches for years, and John Netchman certainly is on the immigration side, and Mary Durbin with the Human Rights Initiative certainly is.
And just to wrap this one up, in this person's case, what happened was so many of us who were American and from a variety of backgrounds came to back him up. He happened to be in a court of the immigration attorney who has the worst record of applying, of giving asylum in the country. Not worst record here, worst record in the country.
Wow.
But because so many of us who were such a variety came to back him up, including his partner's whole family, the judge said, you know, you have a real family here. And because of that, he gave him withholding of removal.
Wow, that's great.
And he said to him, it was heard on the same day that DOMA was heard in the Supreme Court, and he said, if this case goes the right way, you should be able to apply for permanent citizenship, or for your green card leading to permanent citizenship, which he's in the middle of doing
now.
That's great.
Yeah. A lot of people look at immigration as being, oh, you know, immigration, those are immigrant rights, and, well, you know, it's really not an issue. It's, unless it's a Latino issue or something like that, this is, you know, send them back to their country. Well, you know, in this particular, we're talking about family-based immigration. Well, it's really your right as a U.S. citizen, my right, you know, as a U.S. citizen. I was a veteran. I was in the military for 9 years. You know, my right that if I choose to marry someone, I should be able to have the same rights and privileges that a straight person has to sponsor their spouse. Why is it any different? You know?
Exactly the same thing, you know. I have a quick question here about LULAC's response to marriage equality. This was a really exciting time back in 2012, last year, when the president, you know, at the kind of the nudging, the prodding of the vice president, you know, came out in support of marriage equality. And it was just this rapid fire domino thing. You know, the NAACP turned around and, you know, endorsed marriage equality. And LULAC was so incredibly supportive. Can you talk about that experience and how, you know, before and after and everything?
Sure. Well, so our LULAC is a member-driven organization. And so our members at the local level, state level, and national level, when they want to stand behind something or support something, they pass resolutions at each of those levels. And our council, along with the Houston Council, sponsored resolutions at the local, state, and national level in support of marriage equality. And we were so nervous that the body would not pass them. Like we said, well, this group's going to be against it, or this state may not be for it, or we'll have a coalition of people against it, and it passed unanimously. Like there was no discussion about it.
It passed unanimously nationally,
all levels. Yep. Yeah.
When was that?
We did. It was actually right before the president made the statement, and so
long before.
Right. Well, it was just it was literally just maybe a month before or something.
Wow.
And so our national president, the day the President Obama made his statement, was able to issue a statement saying LULAC has supported this and passed these resolutions on many levels in support of full marriage equality. And the cool thing is that we had a chance to write that resolution. I mean, Jesse Garcia and our council and the Houston people, Edward Sanchez, we put it together. And I'll tell you, the funny thing is we were working it at the convention to try to get people to vote affirmatively for it. Edward Sanchez, the Houston president, he's a makeup designer. Like, he has his own makeup line, and so he was doing eyelashes, putting in sort of eyelash implants in the convention center
for free.
And so for free, just to promote his business. So all the little old ladies that were coming to get eyelashes, he was like, make sure you vote for our resolution, and they were like, oh yes. And so there was a line of women waiting to get eyelashes put on by Edward, and he was working the vote
there.
All the falsies. But it was, I mean, it was great that we were able to get the group together. And the idea behind the resolution was You know, we are a family, and we fight discrimination in any form.
Yeah.
And
that shows one of the important reasons to have the Rainbow Council right. here, even if there are most other councils are open, accepting. You know, it's not an issue, but it adds to the yeah. visibility.
Well, exactly. I mean, you have a voice, right? And that's the importance of what really attracted me to 4871 is, and just to break it down a little bit, you know, what Raul mentioned about the resolutions, that wasn't the first one. Uh-huh. We also had one on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you know, years ago, and it really started as the brainchild of this council here in Dallas. And what you do is you write this resolution, you then move it up to the next step, and they vote on it there at the state level, and then it goes to the national level. So, you know, this little resolution that started here in Dallas, Texas, in Cedar Springs, on, you know, a position that we wanted LULAC to accept, started in Dallas, got accepted in Texas, and then up at the national level.
And as accepting as the other councils here in Dallas have been, and I know they were incredibly helpful to Jesse when he was just getting going. I know mm-hmm. they were.
Oh, he was on District 3.
Yeah, exactly. Leadership. So there's not a question. That resolution probably wouldn't have started if you didn't have the Rainbow Council.
Right. Right, and there were so many veterans that said, oh, yeah, that's fine. Like, they signed on board. LULAC has lots of veterans that are part of our membership. And they were on board, but it just took us taking that leadership to say, look, as a group, we think this is important, and everyone sort of supporting it beyond that. There was a resolution supporting ENDA, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, marriage equality. LULAC has been sort of very supportive of LGBT issues over the past few years.
I know when we were in at the state Democratic Convention in 2012, it was right at that time, because he made a statement in May, and our convention, state convention, was in June, mm-hmm. and all of this was all around, but it's probably the same sort of feeling when your larger organization yeah. of something that you've been active in and believe in for a long time. Just absolutely envelops you in this embrace.
Yeah.
That's overarching, and you're a priority now mm-hmm. at their visibility and their agenda. Yeah. And it was just an amazing rush mm-hmm. And wonderful feeling.
Well, yeah, part of what we're trying to do is if we can get 10 Rainbow Councils nationally, then we'll have a caucus within LULAC. And so then all of the officer candidates will have a night dedicated to our caucus, and they'll come and ask for our vote, essentially, for the national leadership. And so that's one of the goals, sort of near-term goals that we have, is to get enough councils to be able to have a caucus. And it'll be a fabulous
party.
There
are other big cities in this country.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You would think that more of them would have
yeah.
Rainbow Council.
But, you know, it's a lot of work, though. It's a lot of work, guys. I mean, honestly, sometimes when I was president and we transitioned, I followed Jesse Garcia as president. I was his vice president. And
talk about filling shoes. You
yeah.
have to do, like,
chunk loss. They had to. They were filling chunk loss.
Right. So, no, that's so true, Patty. I mean, the thing was, Jesse Garcia, you know, we were very visible here and nationally, but quite honestly, Jesse Garcia did most of that work on his own, and I don't think he slept. You know, I think he was just out there writing and doing everything he could. But when Jesse Garcia moved to D.C., I wasn't in a position to be able to do what he was doing, you know. So we really started to come together as a board, and it was a time where we evolved and really worked together to keep us alive and keep us going, and we did. And then from my year, it then transitioned to Raul. We're now with the next president, Jesse DeFi.
And Jesse's reputation here at KNON is that he's the only person in the 30-year history of this station who had a show named after him.
Yeah.
You know, every other show, it's like Lambda Weekly. It's not mm-hmm. the David Taffet and Patty Fink show. It's
mm-hmm.
yes. But it was the Jesse Garcia
yeah,
show.
It was the Jesse.
Yeah, it was the Jesse. Well, you know, Patty, you said something. For whatever reason, it reminded me of something when the Supreme Court decision on DOMA came down. I was at work, as most of us were. And so I got there, and I'd subscribed to a couple of things to get the text message. So I very quickly got the text message from HRC or someone. And, you know, so I get up, and I'm walking around. I work for a company who's just, you know, again, demonstrated history, you know, LGBT equality, great company. But honestly, I went and told people, and it was like, no big deal. You know, like, oh, that's great, you know. And so I went back to my little cube, and I sat down, and I thought, wow, you know, this could not have been the way it was in the early 60s mm-hmm. with right. the Civil Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of depressing. It was so amazing, the feeling that you have that you're finally recognized and we have these rights. And, you know, I actually read the opinion, right, very quickly read it. And if you haven't read, especially the Windsor one, the other one is very, it's all legalese and it's on standing, the Prop 8 case. But if you, you know, I invite you to read this decision. It, I got emotional. You know, yeah, I'm a lawyer, but I don't get emotional with cases. But this opinion is worth reading.
Okay, now this, we could do a whole hour on what I'm about to ask.
Oh, God.
But your quick answer, why do you think the Hispanic community, specifically LULAC, has been so accepting?
Well, actually, there's a whole campaign called Familias Familia campaign, which is the Family is Family campaign. And actually, that's a big push for LULAC right now to say that they polled a lot of Latinos and said, how do you feel about having an LGBT person in your family, or how do you feel about marriage equality? And the binding choice was, well, if that's my brother, or that's my sister, or that's my son, or that's my daughter, then I'm accepting, and they're familia's familia. They're my family. I can't discriminate or turn my back against them. And I think that's really been part of it. So as people in LULAC have gotten to know us, as the people in the National have gotten to know us, or get their eyelashes put on by Edward, like they say, hey, that guy's not so bad. Like, that's cool. That's not a scary person. And so I think that's part of what's happened as well within
with kids coming out younger. Kids just accept other kids in school. As much as we hear about bullying, there's also, they just, oh, okay, so you're gay. Yeah. Oh, okay. You know, yeah. And that becomes the attitude. Yeah. Somebody comes out in your family, oh, okay, well, that's just who you are.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, Raul mentioned Renee Martinez earlier, who worked with the DISD, and they were putting together their security officers. They were putting together it was a full day of training, but our piece, they wanted to include a piece that was talking about LGBT issues and kind of sensitivity training. So he reached out to our council. At the time, I was the president of the council, and so I worked with some contacts I knew in Houston. Again, I go back to the folks I know well, and I know a lot of lesbians who are administration, so they helped me put together a training for DISD.
Awesome. I want to thank all of you. I know we could just keep talking about this. Well, actually, you're going to next week for all day. It is at
UT Dallas at the Clark Center, LGBTQSummit.com.
I'm Dave Tappet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. I want to thank John Trevino, Juan Contreras. We did get you to talk on mic. And Raul Hinojosa. And, go to the summit. I won't be here next week because it's Yom Kippur, but Patty will be here. LaRon will be here. Probably be talking about the parade, which will be the day after that.
Happy
in
pride.
Honor of my birthday, which is that day. It's Aaron's birthday this week. Happy birthday, Aaron. And that's all for us here on Lambda Weekly.
Thanks for having me.